HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Okay, so today I am joined by Donal O'Donoghue. Donal is president of the National Recruitment Federation, and he is managing director of Sanderson Recruitment. Donal, very welcome. How are you?
Good, Declan. Thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. Donal, I was really interested to get you on. The recruitment industry, I think you're a very good person to ask with your, as being a managing director of a recruitment firm and as the president of the National Recruitment Federation, who better to ask? Before we get into that, do you want to do a little intro on yourself, what you do, Sanderson, yourself, and National Recruitment Federation?
Yeah, so I'm Donal O'Donoghue. I've been in the recruitment business for about 25 years actually next month. And so I'm MD at Sanderson. I run the Irish operations, and Sanderson's a global talent business with offices across the UK, Australia, Hong Kong, Singapore, and a support services business in India. And yeah, as you said, I'm president of the National Recruitment Federation, which is the membership body for staffing agencies, recruitment companies, employment agencies in Ireland. So we represent about 90% of the revenue that's generated in recruitment in Ireland. So that's permanent placement recruitment, i.e. helping people to find permanent jobs, but also temporary agency workers. You know, tens of thousands of people access the labour market on temporary or interim assignment every month. And then we're also involved in the placement of senior interim and professional contractors. You know, so this, if you look at the technology sector, the pharmaceutical sector, they tend to also access talent by bringing in professional contractors to fill gaps or to deliver projects. So the National Recruitment Federation works with the recruitment companies and agencies that deliver those services for clients.
Very good. What's it like out there at the moment, Donal? I mean, obviously we're pretty much a year to the day for most people, you know, remotely working, say, or for the more severe conditions kicked in as a result of, you know, people not being free to move about. What's the market like in general?
That's a really tough question, because it's what we've seen is a two-tier labor market develop. You know, we've seen the sectors where services and where work can be done remotely have performed probably better than we expected. So, you know, financial services, technology, the knowledge economy, as people would say, you know, those roles that were able to transition to be done from, you know, a remote base or from home, those areas have stood up quite well. And actually, in the last few months, we've seen a significant increase in the number of job opportunities that are coming on the market. And then on the other side of that, you're seeing the sectors that have ground to a halt, you know, the personal services, hospitality, and so on. So it's really been, even within the National Recruitment Federation, we've had some businesses that have done, you know, that have survived fairly well and have done okay. And then we've had some businesses that are exposed to those sectors that have been worst affected, and it's been very, very tough for them. So I definitely think there's an air of positivity that's coming around now, just as the vaccine is being rolled out. And, you know, I mean, we've been in lockdown for a long time now, so we're recording this in April, and we've been in lockdown since Christmas time effectively. So you would hope that there's light at the end of the tunnel, so there's definitely optimism out there, but it's certainly been a tough year for everyone, I think.
What's changed for you and for the members of the National Recruitment Federation in terms of how you conduct the business, if you like?
Well, I can honestly say I'd never heard the word Zoom before, which is it's hard to believe, you know. So I think when you think about talent, resourcing, recruitment, selection, all of that kind of stuff, that side of things has adapted really well. It's actually easier to do a lot of those things remotely. So the video platforms have been a great help. And actually, if you think about it, candidates that want to go for a job interview, it's a lot more convenient to put on a shirt and tie, or to put on some, you know, business attire and to go into a room and have a Zoom call or have a WebEx or a Teams meeting or something like that, rather than going into work dressed in your suit and having to make an excuse to get out, or going in early, or whatever like that. So it certainly made accessing interviews easier. From the hiring manager and the client's perspective, it's definitely made things easier as well, because one of the challenges that you often had was people saying, look, oh, you know, we've got to get the decision makers, the final people that are going to make the hiring decision, getting them coordinating diaries and getting them into the room at the same time. And, you know, the video platforms make that much easier to coordinate. The challenge has probably been more around onboarding. And when I say onboarding, I'm talking about really from when the person joins the organization, the induction and the kind of embedding into the organization's culture, which is really important, because if you think about culture, the easy to change things are the kind of least important. You know, like when you think about an organization's culture, the visual artifacts that you see, you, when you go into a nice office and you see that it's perhaps vibrant and open plan and set up for collaboration, you know, that stuff is well and good. But a lot of what makes an organization really special are the stories and the behaviors, the daily rituals that actually happen in an organization that people buy into if they feel aligned to that organization. And what's been really interesting over the past year is that people have joined organizations, been inducted and joined teams and are collaborating and delivering their roles. And they haven't yet stepped foot a lot of the time into the office or met their colleagues in person. And surprisingly, those people that have joined organizations in the past year are performing very, very well, because it's, you know, and particularly I'm thinking about graduates now that may have just entered the labor market and never stepped foot into their office or been in once or twice. What's been surprising is how well they've adapted and been inducted and become a part of that organization virtually.
Yeah, really interesting. Anything you're noticing the better companies do to make that happen? Is there a, you know, I think it'd be too much to ask you to tell me what the template is, but, you know, have you seen really good practices that have led to people being, you know, up to speed more quickly?
Yeah, we've seen a broad range of things. Some of the challenges we saw earlier on were the logistics pieces, because, you know, everybody was in lockdown. So, you know, you'd hire somebody new to an organization, it was very hard to get access to kit like laptops, phones and all that kind of stuff and get it out and set up. And a lot of company policies had to change. So from a HR perspective, you know, the health and safety policies around auditing your workspace, because the reliance is still on the organization to provide a safe working environment, even though the working environment may now be the kitchen table or a spare bedroom in somebody's house. So from that policy perspective, I think early intervention there has been really important to make sure that people have the right ergonomic setup, that they have a chair that's suitable to sit at, and that people are encouraged to take their proper breaks. And I think in the earlier days of lockdown, what we saw was people trying to do the engagement piece by having lots of Zoom quizzes and check-ins and trying to have some kind of an open door policy where a manager might say, look, if there's anything you need to ask, I'll be in my virtual room, so on whatever video platform they're using, and that there's kind of an open door policy on the video platform. If you need to chat about anything, just pop on, I'll be on. So we've seen, you know, some of that kind of stuff. But I think for everybody, you know, there's some organizations that were further down the line that had used remote working for quite a while, and perhaps it was an easier transition for them. And then I think for other organizations, remote working was almost reserved for the long tenured and senior staff. And it's just been interesting to see that, that level of trust given to everybody within an organization, people have risen to the challenge. And I think trust is the critical thing here, because certainly the old way of managing employees through presenteeism doesn't work anymore. We've got to manage through outcomes and through setting clear objectives for what we need people to deliver as part of their role. And I think many of the kind of managers that have been working for 10 or 20 years looked for visual signs to see if somebody's behaviors looked as though they were doing a good job. You know, was somebody enthusiastic? Did they arrive early? Did they stay late? And so on. And we don't see those visual cues anymore. But what we see are the outcomes, the quality of somebody's work. You know, do they complete tasks on time and to a high quality? So that's been really interesting. And I think the other challenge from a HR perspective is about helping people to draw a clear line between their work and their home life. Because that is what's really difficult, I think, at the moment. And even speaking personally, when work is at home, somebody said recently, and I thought it was very good, that it's not work from home, it's live from work, because you've more of a tendency to go back. If there's nothing happening, there's not much to do in the evenings, people aren't necessarily going able to go out and have a meal or do anything like that. So if there's a task from work that you know you have to do the next day, is there perhaps a bit of a tendency to go back and end up working late into the evening, which isn't good for anybody's well-being? So I think that's the other challenge for people and HR leaders, is to make sure that we have that demarcation between work life and home life.
Yeah, I heard that live from work comment all right before. It's somewhat depressing, no matter how enjoyable your work is. It is interesting, though, or what I found interesting about all of this is, for a lot of organizations, like you just described, everybody has suddenly gone remote, or the majority, wherever it's been possible, have gone remote. My argument on that is there was actually nothing stopping that previous to the pandemic. And I'm just interested what will happen now afterwards with people who historically have been resistant to having remote workers. Will they revert to type, or has this been just a long enough example of that it does work? Or do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think if we think about it as, and again, I don't want to keep saying the knowledge economy, but for the roles that can be delivered remotely, the experiment, I think, has proven in most cases that this is very effective. And I think this is a good thing for businesses, because from an employer's perspective, you're no longer constrained by how many square feet or square meters of office space that you have. You know, in my own business, in the recruitment profession, you know, you could look at the capacity within the floor of it and say, look, you could fit, you know, 50 staff here, or 100 staff here, or 20 staff into a particular premises. And if you wanted to expand further than that, then you're looking at either moving office or getting overflow office space. So I think that's a very positive thing, that as we come out the other side of this, organizations will be able to look at their workforce planning and their physical environment space and calculate something that makes sense. Because I think the experiment has worked. And I think that trust has grown. And I think that organizations and managers have grown up through this process. And I think the fact that employees have been able to reclaim some, you know, even if it's a couple of days a week, they've been able to reclaim some of the commuting time and maybe invest that into going for a walk or going for a run or taking the dog for a walk or whatever it is. There's a natural balance to that, because when you think about it, you know, the office and the point of going to an office was always about communication, because, you know, the mail, the post arrived to the office in the old days. You know, the telephone system, you know, if you wanted to talk to somebody, you phoned the office and you got put through to an extension. So with communications technology that we have today, it's no longer a necessity for communications, but it is useful for collaboration. So I think the balance is now going to be where work can best be delivered. Because one of the conversations that I've had recently with somebody else in the HR community is really about that, where is the work best delivered? So the open plan office is a good collaboration space. If the tasks that need to be done are varied and many and can be completed, it's a horrible working space if you're trying to concentrate on one long task, like a piece of research or writing or analysis, where people can just come up to you and chat to you about the football or the rugby or, you know, family stuff or whatever it is. But like, if you don't want to be interrupted in an open plan office when you've got a task like that to do, it's very difficult. So giving control and giving trust back to employees to be able to say, look, you know, on Monday and Tuesday, I've got these tasks to complete that are probably better completed with a bit of peace and quiet at home. And, you know, on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I need to collaborate. I need to see people. We need to meet. So I think the ability to have that blend is what's going to work really well for organizations and work really well for employees as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. That work that you just need that deep focus on is an open plan office is toxic for trying to get that work done. And moving forward, obviously, it's changed the boundaries for both yourself in Sanderson and your members in terms of the National Recruitment Federation of and I'm sure, and sorry, some of you and your members are international organizations, but I think it's opened up the global talent base to most organizations who are in that knowledge economy, especially. What are you guys thinking about in terms of the future? Are you now more thinking that, okay, well, we're competing now on a global basis for talent, or is that the mindset you and your members are in?
Yeah, I think what's been interesting is we've seen a bit of a swing in this area, because if you go back to March of last year, when the initial lockdowns came and everybody went remote, there were some organizations that came out quite early and said, look, we're going to be remote until this period of time or that period of time. And what we saw was some of their employees headed off to different areas to deliver their role and were allowed to do so. And some left the country and, you know, perhaps went back home if they were from a different country or something like that. Because nobody expected, not nobody, but most people didn't expect us to be in lockdown this long. And then as the HR profession and the finance teams got thinking about it, they were starting to think, well, hang on, now that people might have been, you know, for 30 or 60 or 90 days working from a different jurisdiction, where are the duties of the work being carried out and where's the income tax liability? And there's a whole level of complexity. And then they started to think about company property, like kit, like laptops and so on. And then you start to think about personal privacy and GDPR and data security. And then I think there was a swing back the other way that people said, okay, look, everybody needs to come back and, you know, deliver the role. It can be remotely, but it needs to be within the country where the organization is based. So we've definitely seen that side of things. In terms of our own organization, it's been quite interesting. So Sanderson as a business was historically a UK and Ireland recruitment company. So we're in Bristol, Cardiff, Cheltenham, Dublin, Edinburgh, Glasgow, Leeds, London, Manchester, Reading and Southampton. And over the past number of years, we've made some investments and some acquisitions to bring us into new markets like Hong Kong, Singapore, Sydney. We're looking at opportunities in North America at the moment as well. And we have a business in India. So we had been on this kind of path to globalization of our own organization. And that strategy was very much to do with where we saw growth opportunities in markets that had good alignment with our core business. So it's been interesting. So for us, I'm glad that we're kind of on that path and that we're looking at new opportunities. We've brought some fantastic people into our business as leaders and as recruitment consultants across different jurisdictions. We're all learning from each other. And I think when you're involved in a business that's growing both organically and through mergers and acquisitions, there's a great synergy and there's a great ability to learn from what's working well in different countries that are at different stages. So, for example, our businesses in Asia, you know, probably had exposure to lockdowns and to the real impact of COVID-19 before it hit us here in Europe. And so on, and had embraced different technologies at different times. So that ability to collaborate and learn from each other, I think, has been quite interesting.
In general, then, say for a startup, say a knowledge-based startup in Dublin, do you think it's an opportunity or a bigger threat to be competing on a global scale for the talent you need? As a small organization starting up, for example, do you have any chance of getting the people who maybe historically, you know, Google, Facebook, the FANGs companies have been after? Or is it this ideal? It's opened it up. What's your thoughts?
I think it's a big opportunity for startups, because one of the big challenges with startups when you're in the early days of trying to secure funding, or whether you're trying to bootstrap it and do it on your own funding, you know, the ability to access talent and the ability to, you know, get your premises and everything like that sorted out is what eats up a lot of your working capital in the early days. So I would love the idea, if I was starting a business now, the ability to really just invest in the talent without being constrained with the premises. Because, you know, if you've got a good virtual setup and you make an investment in having some decent technology and a decent setup, you can compete with organizations that, you know, have invested in these fantastic premises and, you know, all the bells and whistles. It's been a great leveler. And actually, when we're looking now and we see real in-demand talent, what's been interesting is that and it comes back to company culture, the plush offices and the free snacks, that's all become irrelevant. You know, those tools that some organizations used to kind of lure people in, to kind of say, isn't this a really great place to work? Because, you know, actually you could stay at the office longer because you get your food or your dinner or your snacks or whatever like that. A lot of that stuff has now been relegated to the sideline. And actually what's really important is how aligned you are to what the business is doing. Do you find the work meaningful? Is it aligned with your own career ambitions? Do you like the people that you're working with? Do you feel that, you know, this is a direction you want to go with your career? So I actually think it's been a great leveler and a great opportunity for startups to be able to manage their costs and drive their productivity and their profitability.
A really good point. National Recruitment Federation, for those listeners who aren't aware of it or who don't know what it does, what are the goals, the objectives of it?
Well, we're here, I suppose, to support the recruitment profession, and we do that under a number of different headings. I suppose one of the things that we would be best known for this year is on the education side of things. So we deliver the Certificate in Recruitment Practice, which is the main recognized certificate for recruitment and talent professionals, you know, where they learn about employment law and business development and, you know, best practice around data privacy and so on like that. And then last year in 2020, we worked with National College of Ireland to develop the first degree, the first BA honors degree in recruitment practice anywhere in the world. So we launched that last September, and that was really interesting because, you know, you could study recruitment as a module, as a subset of HR. But when we talk about recruitment, we're not just talking about the recruiting and selection element of human resources. We're talking about staffing and recruitment, which is a multi-billion dollar global economy, which allows people to access the labor market again as permanent employees, as temporary agency workers, and as professional contractors. So the fact that there's now an honours degree for people in recruitment is a really positive thing, because typically what would have happened is that recruitment organisations would have hired graduates from other disciplines. So somebody might have done a HR degree or a business degree, or maybe they didn't have a degree, maybe they had, you know, a certificate or a diploma in a different area, and they would have to come in and learn the business from the ground up. Whereas these people now, the first cohort, have just finished their first year, and they're being trained in the most up-to-date legislation, together with the most up-to-date digital sourcing technology, to say, look, if we're trying to find very, very difficult to find skill sets in very challenging areas, they'll have the latest technology and ability to really hone in and find those skills that organizations are looking for. So there's now, I suppose, a defined career path that a school leaver or somebody that's looking for a career in recruitment can actually say, look, I can go and get my qualification done. Aside from that, then, we're strong on events. So we're probably known for hosting some large conferences. So we'll have the Employment and Recruitment Conference, which will bring together people from the recruitment industry and HR across Ireland and the UK. And that will have a focus on diversity and inclusion. So we've got a top D&I speaker from California, from LA, a lady by the name of Stacey Gordon, who's joining us for that. And she's a real advocate and chief diversity officer for some very significant organizations. She's also the author of a book called Unbiased, which was an Amazon bestseller on unconscious bias. So she's joining us. Keith Barry will be joining us as well on helping people to remove their self-limiting beliefs. And I think Keith is brilliant at that stuff, at unlocking the potential that's in people's minds. And then together with that, we'll bring together, thought leaders and experts from different areas of talent-related technology and so on. We're trying to make sure that people are kept up to speed, working at best practice, and that there's a constant ability to complete continuous professional development or kind of learning initiatives. So breakfast briefings and lunchtime lives, and keeping everybody at the cutting edge as best we can.
Good. What are the current challenges for your members, Donal? I mean, obviously we spoke earlier in terms of, you know, depending on what sector they might be working in, would depend on how the market was. But is there any sort of commonality in terms of what the challenges are?
Well, I think the positive thing is that recruitment is a pretty transferable skill set. So the challenges were definitely the organizations that, for example, recruited into hospitality or recruited into the retail sector. And you know, I know some people that run those recruitment businesses, and they're incredible people. And they have, I know the term everyone's using is to pivot, but they have looked at their business, looked at their proposition and said, okay, we've got the technology, we've got the expertise in sourcing and recruitment, we've got good client relationships in some areas. So they've had to perhaps adapt their proposition, adapt how they've worked. But what's been encouraging is that those businesses have managed to survive and perform well and kind of recalibrate and just change how they've operated. And it's been good to see. And I think the positive thing about the NRF is that it's made resources available to those people. So one of the things we did early in the first lockdown was that we ran a campaign, a Keep Ireland Working campaign, which was really, it was very much focused on job seekers that maybe had been laid off, you know, from aviation or hospitality or retail, and helping them to find opportunities in sectors that were growing. So, you know, to see if we could get them into maybe contact tracing roles, or see if we could get them into logistics when online retail started to have an upswing and started to need to hire people with different skill sets. So as we saw that with the kind of job seekers, we saw the similar trend then with the recruitment organizations, just adapting their skill set and trying to change and recruit for markets that were in growth and that were hiring.
Fantastic. Donal, thanks so much for joining us today. If people wanted to get in contact with yourself or the National Recruitment Federation, what's the best way to do so?
So the National Recruitment Federation, you can find us at nrf.ie, and we're always happy to talk to any recruitment or talent organizations that are interested in being part of the organization. And anyone that wants to connect with me, happy to do so on LinkedIn or on Twitter, Donal O'Donoghue _.
Brilliant, Donal. Thanks a million.
Declan, thank you.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.